I'm Brian Reed. I'm moderating this panel. I work for WCG, which is a strategic communications firm with a historic interest in healthcare. I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves in a moment, but wanted to take a couple minutes and kind of ground everyone on why we're having this discussion in the first place. And it starts last July. There was a blog post about a mother who had a child with a rare disease, and she had a public, open to the public, Facebook group dedicated to discussing this rare disease. And a representative from the pharmaceutical industry followed this group, you know, for 2 or 3 months and reached out to this woman and said, you know, I think we've got a lot in common. We're both interested in raising awareness, and I think there's a lot of synergies between what you're trying to do and what I'm trying to do. And this seemed very reasonable to me, but this mother had the exact opposite reaction. And, you know, she thought it was creepy that a company would be reaching out to her in this personal space of health. And so it got me thinking, even though that didn't sound right to me, and even though anyone here who wants to tweet, if you say, hey, Comcast, I'm having a problem with my cable modem, before this panel's over, you're going to get 2 or 3 responses back from Comcast. No one finds that very creepy. But the idea that someone would reach out and talk about health, even a public issue, even something that they talked about openly, for that to be creepy suggested that there was a dialogue that wasn't happening about where the boundaries were, what really is creepy, and what's just good participatory healthcare. So the panelists all here, I think, have a particular perspective. They've all dealt with this issue. And so we're hoping to have a really good dialogue. Towards the end, we're going to have the wireless mic circulate. If you have something to say, if you'd like to join the dialogue, raise your hand, and we'll have a volunteer help you out. And mostly, I'm just glad that so many of you braved the daylight saving and a late night on 6th Street. As Jimmy Buffett said, there's a fine line between Saturday night and Sunday morning, so I'm glad that you guys are all on the right side of this. So we'll go left to right across your dial, as they say, with Michelle Pauls.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michelle Pultz, and head of an area within the U.S. Diabetes Division of Sanofi called Patient Solutions. And the reason why my role is created and my team's created is that we are trying to understand the true wants and needs of people living with diabetes on a daily basis to better provide them with the right services and solutions to improve their life experience and or their outcomes, whether they be clinical, economic, or patient-reported. So as our team evolves from going back past the drug model to more of a drug plus device plus services and solutions, we know it's really important to engage with people living with diabetes to, like I said, to understand their true wants and needs.
Hello, I'm Allison Bloss, and I think first and foremost, I'm a patient. I've had type 1 diabetes for 18 years, and I currently work as an assistant editor at diabetesmind.com, which is one of the leading diabetes blogs and is part of Alliance Health Networks. And I've been writing about diabetes for about 10 years, so I've really come at health education and patient advocacy from the patient side of things. But I've also had the pleasure of working with Brian at WCG, so I'm a bit of a double agent as it comes to working on the PR side and being a blogger at the same time. So I think I have a unique perspective in understanding the legal and regulatory constrictions and problems and challenges that pharma often faces, having worked in healthcare, public relations, but I also know the needs and desires of patients as a patient myself and a patient blogger.
Just feel very short. Okay, so I'm Carrie Sparling, and this is a very diabetes kind of centric panel. Sorry.
That's okay.
Everyone's here, we all have diabetes. I've had type 1 for 25 years, and I write a diabetes blog called Six Until Me, and I don't have any, like, big, sorry? SixUntilMe.com. I started my blog because I didn't know anyone else who had diabetes, and I felt like the soloist, and, you know, everyone that I was friends with, they didn't shoot up before they took their, you know, their meals in the beginning of the day. So I wanted to find that community of people who, you know, were little druggies like me, and that was really what I was looking for. So I started my patient blog, and then through years of blogging, I've been in touch with PR companies and fellow patient bloggers and pharma companies, and it's just been such an interesting discussion seeing these people come together. And we all think we're so separate from one another, but we're all part of the same mess, right? So, I don't know, I think that's important to know, and that's actually what I want to talk about, just the more like how we're all people, and it sounds really cheesy, but that's kind of the bottom line, so.
Group hug.
We can hug after.
Okay. All right. Is this thing on? Can you hear me? Everybody nods, all right. My name's Alicia Staley. I don't have diabetes. Just to help balance this panel out a little bit, I'm a 20-year cancer survivor. I've had cancer 3 times, and basically have been an empowered patient for before that was even a phrase, I guess you could say. I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease when I was a sophomore in college, and learned very quickly that you have to build communities around yourself in order to get through a cancer treatment, and it's you got to do it any way you can. With the advent of networks like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, you basically can build very dynamic communities around a disease state very quickly, and I think that the possibility for patient groups and pharma representatives to work together to provide spaces that are safe, that provide proper education and information for patients going through a serious treatment is, I think that's the best thing that we can do right now with the technology that we have. So that's my perspective for today's panel. I'll turn it back to Brian.
No, and I think that's a good jumping off point, because I think one of the questions is, how do you build those relationships? And I know in the discussions we've had leading up to this, and this is something that Carrie has spoken about, and Michelle, I think you have a perspective, is, you know, just from a very tactical point of view, we talk a lot about community managers, but it's this idea of who is responsible for, and again, you hate to use these business terms, but who's responsible for owning a relationship, and how, from a patient point of view, do you respond to someone approaching you, and how, from a business point of view, do you assign someone to be that liaison?
Sure. Being reached out to from pharma companies by, you know, you hear from Bob, and Bob is like nice the first email he sends you, but then the next week you hear from Katie, and she's got a different message from the same company, and then the next week you hear from somebody else, and it's like, we're one patient, right? But we're getting emails from countless people from the same company. They don't even seem to talk to one another, but they want our undivided attention, and it's just, there's something really nice about having the same person to deal with from the same company, so you actually get to... And you get to know that person. So, okay, Bob's going to email me, but I know a little bit about Bob after a couple emails instead of just, I feel like, you know, a product of a mail merge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for us within, diabetes, we actually have, I have a team member who is our online community manager, Laura Kolajewski. She actually has her own blog called Discuss Diabetes. It's in a therapeutic area. It's unbranded, obviously. And it's where she can engage, connect, and really listen to the online community. So that's the face. It's in a therapeutic area. It's not in corporate communications. It's in where we want to really truly engage with people living with this chronic disease. And I'm sure you guys can speak to your relationships with Laura, but we use Laura really as the handshake to others when we know that we need to add value through different other team members, and our plans are to continue having those conversations with Laura by introducing other team members from our division.
But at the same time, because you have Laura, it's the same person,
the
so
same
we actually
face.
Get to know her a little bit. It doesn't feel so
right.
Businessy. It feels like there's an actual relationship,
yeah,
and not just a flash.
Exactly. I mean, we don't within the team live with diabetes, or really, we know people who have it.
It's okay
our
if
life.
You don't have diabetes.
No, and I'm saying no, but I'm saying if you understand that, you know, we came right out of the gate saying, "Look, we don't. But we want to understand how best to solve for it." So we're authentic. We're as transparent as we can be within our, you know, regulatory walls. But you know, we're here to really learn.
I'd like to add a little different dimension to it, because in the cancer world, my perspective looking at the diabetes community is there tends to be a little bit of a brand loyalty. Is that a fair statement in terms of the drug regimens that you're on, or the the products that you might use?
Maybe fewer options.
Fewer options? Mm-hmm. All right. In the cancer world, you're not really going to run around with a T-shirt on that says, I love my chemo drug, or, you know, like, you're not going to want to like a Facebook page for Adrian Myosin, or, you know, insert chemo drug here kind of deal. So I think that that kind of relationship is very different in terms of what can be done in the diabetes community. In the cancer community, I think the key area where patients and pharma need to come together is on education and promoting clinical trials and making sure that patients have information about the drugs that you really don't have a choice. You're not, when you come down with cancer or however you want to say it, you're pretty much given one or two different drug options. It's not like you can really evaluate, you know, different things along the way there. And I think education is the key for that kind of relationship or that the building of connections between patients and pharmas in that world.
No, can I bring up the word creepy again? You know, in our previous
creepy,
conversations,
yeah.
You know, you've said that, again, as a cancer survivor, it is a little creepy for someone to be pushing, you know, a particular product, particularly one that you, thank goodness, don't need right now. I mean, where does, you know, is there a line there between, again, this idea of education and pushing a particular product? You know, where's that line drawn between appropriate and inappropriate in your experience or in cancer?
I think that, you know, it's hard to promote a drug to a patient in a cancer world. I think it's inappropriate when the focus is on, you know, you have choice A or choice B for your breast cancer chemotherapy, and we're the better choice. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can't, unless you understand the makeup of what that patient is going through, there's really no, I'm not sure if I'm saying it the right way, but each person that's going through a cancer diagnosis has a very unique situation. And I'm not trying to minimize or suggest that diabetes can be taken care of with just a few different drugs, but, you know, there's not going to be the loyalty or the long-term kind of relationship that you might be able to have in a diabetes community. Hopefully you don't have a long-term relationship in regards to chemotherapy or even a radiation device of some sort in cancer land, if you will. But
okay. Well, I want to turn a little bit and talk about kind of what patients see their responsibilities, you know, not just industry acting appropriately. You know, and I think part of that, everyone knows, is kind of disclosure and transparency, and there are different levels. You know, the FTC has certain rules about what you have to say and what's required. But I don't know if, Allison, you and Carrie would like to talk about, you know, what are those, you know, what disclosure assumptions do you operate under? You know, what's the floor, what's the ceiling in terms of how much you talk about?
Sure. I mean, in our experience working with different pharmaceutical companies, full disclosure of any financial exchange or gain is incredibly important, I think, just because when we talk about particular products that we either personally use or, especially in the case of Diabetes Mind, we report on everything going on in the diabetes industry. So we write about products that we don't use, especially in regards to type 2 diabetes. We write about type 2 drugs and devices, but neither myself or my editor have type 2 diabetes. But when we work with companies, if we are talking about a product and we don't disclose that they paid for our hotel or our flight, then there can be sometimes not even a conscious assumption, but even an unconscious assumption that a patient is leaning more favorably towards one company over another. And I think it's really important when you're educating somebody about a drug or a device that they're going to be using long-term, probably forever, for their health, that they really know where you're coming from and why you're saying what you're saying. If you're saying it because you've read a press release, that should be very obvious. If you're writing an opinion or some thoughts because you are actually using the device or the drug, that should be very clear. If you're writing about it because they've paid you to do something, you should make that very clear.
My blog is personal, so the bias is disclosed just by clicking on it. I'm not writing for a company. I have a daughter. She's the prettiest girl in the world. My husband is the greatest guy in the world. My mom is awesome. My biases are disclosed. That's what I think about my family, and I think that my biases as far as the devices I'm using should also be disclosed. I'm sponsored by Johnson & Johnson makes an insulin pump called an Animas Ping, and they sponsor me. I tell my readers that I have a sponsorship agreement. They send me free product. Everyone knows that they send me free product. It's one of those things where I feel like that needs to be told to the people reading my blog. That bias needs to be understood because it does color, you know, the things that I'm saying. If my pump doesn't work, it's going to make me less angry than the person who actually spent $6,000 on theirs, you know, so money comes into play. But I just feel like it's important for people to know across the board where you stand, because everyone can pick apart everybody for not saying this or not saying that. Disclosing who's paying for hotels, totally. But, like, in the grand scheme, everyone has biases. To pretend that you don't have them is just a little shady in and of itself. So as long as people know, you know, who you are, where you stand, they can kind of read that and sort of know who you are and kind of take your words from there. Pardon?
Can we take a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, that I do disclose. Everything is disclosed, but
yeah.
It's more like pretending not to have bias. You guys are right. More of a news site. My blog is a personal blog, so I can't say I feel very objectively about it. I don't. I'm very subjective about the whole thing, but I think that's an important thing for people to know when they're reading my site, that I actually do have an emotional and a financial and a whatever tie to all of these things. I just think it's important for people to know what that tie is. It's not... You know, so it's very disclosed. It's just a different sort of
I think regardless
website.
Of whether it's a financial bias, I mean, because, you know, if there's money being exchanged, the FTC requires that you say that. But even if it's not, I mean, my editor and I both wear insulin pumps, and so we have sort of more favorable feelings towards that, and that should be understood that we are both on that and that that's of interest to us. But that doesn't... You know, that doesn't mean we talk less about another product. That's just our experience. And so people can understand where we're coming from.
I'd like to add, in my perspective, it's very different. So I'm not sponsored by anybody, which is good. but I'm invited quite a bit to attend conferences on behalf of pharmaceutical companies that work in the oncology space, and anytime I go, I write at awesomecancersurvivor.com, and I write, you know, who sent me to the conference, you know, that they paid my way, or they, you know, I was their guest for the week, and make it very clear, and always link back to the pharmaceutical company that sent me. But usually, I have free rein to write about whatever I want, and I think they appreciate that it's not always going to be a nice, fluffy piece about how great they are. But, you know, again, being open and honest about why I'm attending conferences is the best way to go as far as I'm concerned. So.
Do we still have one more question?
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Yeah.
Okay. Jack West. I'm a medical oncologist in Seattle, and I run a cancer education nonprofit called GRACE, Global Resource for Advancing Cancer Education. One limitation I see in the interactions with pharma and education for patients is that you know, pharma is pretty tightly regulated, and by that I mean extremely tightly regulated in not pitching concepts that are outside of FDA indications, and yet almost everything in oncology is done outside of indications, or at least huge amounts, and nothing of interest is within the indication. It's everything that is worth talking about is kind of investigational or, you know, not limited by the FDA. So, you know, how can there be a fruitful collaboration between pharma and educating in a world where you can't talk about things that aren't FDA approved.
I guess I'll take a stab at this really quick, because I'd like Michelle's perspective on this too. But from the patient perspective, my question has always been, educate me on what you can and cannot say as a pharmaceutical company, because I don't know that. So I personally do know that because I've dug into the guidelines and I understand how limiting, or you know, what the FDA has done in terms of sort of handcuffing communication. But the average patient out there doesn't understand that pharma can't tell you about this because of X, Y, and Z. And there needs to be a better understanding of what can be said and what can't be said and why. And patients need to understand that, because that, to me, is the biggest, that's the biggest barrier to really creating collaborative environments where education can be the key focus, because people don't understand it's not a level playing field all the way across the board. But yeah. Michelle?
No, I totally understand where your, you know, where your concerns are, but any piece of content that has got its brand mentioned is considered promotional and have to really follow the guidelines. Within our Discuss Diabetes blog, it's an unbranded but on label, you know, meaning you talk about. So we are able to do less. We were less promotional, so we have less constraints as what goes on as to what we can talk about, because we're not promoting our products. Mm-hmm. We're really just engaging in the conversation and highlighting really areas around services and solutions that we're seeing in the marketplace. Our Facebook page is branded, so we can, you know, post things about our blog. I mean, post things about our brand. And I apologize, my voice is getting froggier. But I think when we started our blog last year in the same time frame, within 2 weeks, we put in front of the community a Q&A with our head of our regulatory team so that we could share what we could and could not say, and how we were going to be able to engage with them right from the start. So we started right away with, here's Mark Gatos, who's head of our regulatory team, and he will answer the questions as best as we can as to how we're going to engage in social leveraging, what's the guidelines today from the FDA, which are very limited. So I don't know if that helped you, but...
You know, if on your Facebook page or on a blog, there's a forum question and somebody asks about off-label use of something, is every answer going to be, you'll need to talk with your doctor about that?
Well, what happens if there's different, obviously, guidelines as to how we play. It's not that, you know, we do review all the posts, and we will say, we do tell you that we may not be able to post everything, but we will get back to that person. If it's not online, it's in a private conversation. So we do manage it. Again, sometimes, you know, when you, like Brian was saying, if you, you know, tweet about your problem with Comcast, you'll get some instant, you know, response. Ours may take a little bit longer, but we've already been very honest as to how we play that way.
But a lot of times the patients are filling in those gaps. So yeah. If you want to talk about off-label use, go look at what the patients are saying. They're saying everything.
Pharma company sponsors your blog, and there's some.
They don't
Q&A.
Sponsor your blog.
Okay, well,
so there's the difference, though. So that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's worth clarifying. I mean, if a pharma company is sponsoring any patient space, presumably it would be verboten to have patients talking with each other about these things as well.
No, I mean, the only things that we do today are more sponsors programs within each of their areas. So Diabetes Mind, we sponsor an innovation summit.
Right.
And, you know, Diabetes Hands Foundation, we sponsor their new Advocate Seed program. So those are the kind of things, because we feel that we are going to learn from those versus we're not here to push our product.
And I want to use that as a jumping off point. You know, I the patients talked a little bit about kind of disclosure and why they do what they do. But again, that episode last summer, the implication was this, you know, I don't want to deal with this pharma company because their interest, their stated interest is selling more product, be that on-label, be that off-label. And so I'm curious if you, you know, from Sanofi's point of view, what is your purpose in, you know, building this, given that it's largely unbranded? You know, what role are you playing if not to, you know, if it's in a non-branded environment?
Yeah, I mean, again, my team and my role and responsibility for Sanofi is to engage with people living with diabetes so we can understand true wants and needs. So we're not... And provide the right service or solution. So, and or identify services and solutions that are already out there that need scalability, that can help solve for people living with their daily life of managing diabetes. Again, I'm not here to find the next molecule, right? I'm here to actually engage with people so I can find the right product of a service or a solution to offer.
I think just to, I guess, address this one woman's point of view is I think it's important to note that not every patient is going to want to be engaged. Not every patient's going to, I had another personal blog about my life. I wrote about diabetes, but I very, very rarely ever posted anything news related to diabetes. That just was not what I wanted to write about. And so I think the assumption that if I got a press release that I was immediately going to write about it, I think marketing and PR agencies need to just realize that just because some blogs do it doesn't mean all blogs do it. And I think going at it from more of building a relationship and just really reviewing the blog, seeing if that's something that they've written about, and at least in the opening, you know, email, kind of, you know, making that personal introduction and trying to form a relationship and understand a little bit more about what the patient's goals are, that would really help facilitate more of a back and forth conversation about whether or not this mom is going to want to help this pharmaceutical company promote their drugs. I mean, maybe if it was handled a little more slowly, where she was able to get to know them, it would have been more appealing. Or maybe she still wouldn't have been interested because she just doesn't want to engage. Because it's really important to know why the pharmaceutical company is doing what they're doing. I mean, if it's they've got an educational campaign, or if they're trying to get patient feedback for a program, that's one thing. If they are just trying to make, or if they seem like they're just trying to make another buck, that's an entirely different impression.
I just want to add one thing to that, just to maybe address the scenario that you were talking about just a little bit more. If you're on Twitter and you send out a tweet, you know, oh, geez, I'm hungry, or it's snack time or something like that, and Chex Mix tweets you back, you know, hey, how about some Chex Mix or something like that? That's appropriate, okay? That's cute, it's funny. You know, it's in line with the medium that you're on. If you tweet out, I have a headache, and, you know, Tylenol tweets you back, you know, then that's where you're starting to, you know, that's a gray area, okay? That's where you're starting to get into the creepiness of, I think, what the woman was referring to. If you're on a Google Plus page or Facebook page and you announce, I was just diagnosed with, you know, breast cancer, and, you know, AstraZeneca tweets back at you like, hey, we got a really good chemo drug, you know? Like,
yeah.
That's kind of the analogy that I think you're getting at. It's the context or the aggressive nature that the social media channels, that there's no context around these channels. And
actually, sorry. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just close. Lots of friends up there, but you guys are doing great. I just wanted to sort of try and get to the next level, because I feel like for those of us who've been doing this stuff for 7+ years, we sort of get pulled back to the beginning of what about off-label and what about this and what about that. And I feel like there's already guidelines that are established. There's guidelines for whether it's online or not, how to handle an off-label comment, how to handle this and that. And I think the FDA just address that, and Peter Pitts went on to further address it at ePharma by just standing up and saying, all right, pharma, guide thyself. Everything you need is out there. Go and use common sense and do it. Mm-hmm. What I'm continually struck by, and then I also think there's the branded, unbranded. I mean, look at the UK, look at the EU. All they have are unbranded online conversations, and they're doing just fine. There's plenty to be had by that. The other thing that strikes me, though, is there's a huge patient community that wants outreach. There's a huge pharma community struggling how to do it. And then there's these huge conferences. There's EPAT-Con that a handful of pharma people will go to, but not nearly enough. And then there's ePharma that more and more patients will go to, but not nearly enough. And they're still siloed. How do we bring these two separate work streams together more to actually move the needle in the direction where you guys already are and everybody needs to catch up?
Yeah, so I actually would... perfect, but I wanted to like continue that, but I think it might help you too. I think with pharma or with any marketing groups, it's not just about a campaign. This is part of your strategy, right? This is more than just check the box, I have a Facebook page or a Twitter handle. This, it has to align with what your objectives and your strategy within your own business is trying to achieve. As I said before, I keep saying it, we're trying to engage with people to understand true wants and needs. We can't build it in the four walls if we don't start having conversations with people living with it every single day. And that's the key for us. It's not just a campaign. It's not a program. It's part of an overall strategy.
I'd just like to add, though, that your business strategy is my life. You know, like, you know, so you guys come at it from the perspective, and I'm not trying to be negative when I say this, but just remember that you guys are in a very interesting position because, yes, you're selling product. Yes, you have revenue objectives to meet. But at the end of the day, you have somebody that's going to consume your product, that's going to improve their life in some fashion, or in my case, extend their life.
No, absolutely. So that's what I'm saying. It's not just, it shouldn't be taken lightly.
No, and I agree with you. I'm just trying to reinforce that from the outside looking in at pharma.
Right. Totally agree.
I recognize that you don't have an easy job. I really appreciate what you do. I appreciate that it's a very unique position that you're in, and I know that it's a struggle. But I think to follow up with what Gigi was asking, there has to be a way that more patients and pharma companies and healthcare organizations come together to address the fact that this is a very unique business model that's got payers and insurers, and the workflow is not linear on this at all.
So let me kick that back to those of you on the panel. You know, given that there seems to be this desire to have more of this interaction, what do you guys as patients want from industry? I mean, because I think in some ways, we don't necessarily need more check. As a consumer, I don't need more Chex Mix. But I'm guessing there are things as patients that you actually, there is a synergy here. And I'm not sure that on our side of the table that's always obvious. I mean, you don't have stamped on your forehead, I need access to ASCO this year because I need to see X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a need. We could help you fill it. You know, what's the wish list of things that we could work together to bring?
Brian, before you jump there, just because you're on this topic, As a Gary Thompson cloud, I said in my talk at TEDx Austin, as a husband of a cancer survivor, like Alicia, if that tweet knew what cancer my wife had and it was the exact right drug to make her better, I want her to get that tweet. Mm. Right? That's the other perspective. This is life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want my free speech regulated. Right? Mm-hmm. If you know that you can help, I want to know that. And I think that's the part that we've got to get to is, how do we know that?
But it's the context.
Yeah. It's the context, exactly.
Yeah, there has to be a better understanding of the context. I absolutely agree with you. If somebody can tweet me the exact chemo regime I need, fire away. Don't hold back. And we'll deal with the FDA later.
Hi, I'm Jody Schauger, cancer survivor and blogger. But one thing that I've always wondered, why even on an educational level, we can't have some kind of summit, some kind of round table where the main manufacturers sit with interested survivors, because at the point of diagnosis, you're presented with this list of medical information that makes no sense. Consequently, there is a river of distrust in the cancer community that, you know, all pharma is evil and pharma is bad. Well, listen, pharma is going to probably save your life unless you have a cancer that can be cut out. So let's figure out what kind of attitude we're going to have here and make it work for us. But the educational component is so huge and getting those conversations going.
Well, I think one thing that's been very fortunate for Carrie and I have been able to do those summits with two diabetes device manufacturers, Roche Diagnostics and Medtronic. who've hosted. We've done three with Roche and one with Medtronic. And they've been with the high-level VPs, the people who are in charge of product development, the ones that are in charge of communications and marketing. I've also done, because there's a difference, I've also done focus groups, which are entirely different from summits with the key leadership of pharma. Focus groups are usually done by a paid third party. The people you're talking to have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, they're asking questions off of a piece of paper and writing down your answers, but there's no dialogue. They just say, this is the question, we're writing down your answers, we're going to go back and you know, send this off. But when you're actually able to meet one-on-one with the people who are really in charge of the strategy and the design of these products, you're really able to give firsthand accounts of what these products, what these drugs, what these devices are doing to the patient, which is incredibly important. And just the fact, I mean, I, as disclosure, I use a Medtronic insulin pump, but I don't use a Roche meter. I never have used a Roche meter. But I love Roche because they're taking the time to listen to the issues that we have, and they're trying to make their product better using the feedback that we're given. And they do their homework, and they pick the 30 diabetes bloggers and patient advocates who have shown their commitment, who have shown that they themselves are also listening to the community, and you know, we're able to act as the go-between between pharma and 24 million Americans, and actually, you know, 100, 200 million people in the world. I mean, diabetes is the same no matter what country you live in. It doesn't change. And, you know, hopefully we're helping to make the next generation of products even better. I mean, that's why, you know, we've worked with Sanofi has sponsored the Diabetes Mind Design Challenge and our summits that we're now having with pharma to help improve products, to help really identify the needs that are in products, what's missing in the next gen. You know, how can we make the next generation of insulin pumps and meters and products and all that even better to really address the needs of patients? And I think we've been talking a lot about diabetes, but this is something that no matter what disease you're representing, you know, you can really take part of. I mean, you have your community, you have the people who are dealing with health problems, and they need to be listened to.
I think, you know, those that play pharma today, you know, you have key thought leaders, key opinion leaders, mm-hmm. and those are mostly your medical areas. Guess what? There's new key opinion leaders to be had. So you need to understand who they are and add value back into your business.
But I just also think it's important when we all get in the room, a lot of times patients are viewed as like the pharma companies lurk at us and they watch us. And they do,
like yeah. we're critters at the zoo.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we're, you know, getting everybody in the room, it kind of takes down the bars from the zoo. It becomes less like these patients are these creatures that you guys watch and like understand our moves and plot our mating rituals, and like it's better, you know,
you
get to know us as people. And you know, I think that's the component that's missing, is understanding that we're all, again, sounds cheesy, but we're all people and not zoo animals.
Quick
just,
question.
Good question.
Just one follow up. Sure. Just one follow up. Sorry. In the cancer space, though. A lot of that collaboration really needs to be around education, you know, which is, I think, a little. So could you imagine a focus group for a chemo drug? You know, we've got this new drug. It's going to make you really sick.
But, you know, navigating clinicaltrials.gov.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that space, understanding what drugs are out there, what clinical trials are available for you.
Right,
because, you know, a lot of those clinical trials are hospital specific. Or, you know, research group specific. And if you're being treated in Boston and there's a clinical trial going on in, you know, wherever, Houston, you might not find out about it. And it's important.
Good morning. My name is John Nosta. I tweet a lot about health. I'm with Ogilvy. Dr. West, it's good to see you. Some of my Twitter friends. On the way in from the airport today, I tweeted, should I bring my umbrella? Actually, yesterday. And immediately, I got a reply from a mobile retail umbrella seller. And I'm curious, if I tweet I have cancer, is it a cry for help? because on one hand, you said it's weird for pharma to react to me, yet on the other hand, you said, bring it on. And I'm kind of, I'm caught in that continuum. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit about seeking or responding to tweets and initiatives that people put.
That's an interesting question, because what you're saying is there's a do I need an umbrella is a very simple yes or no kind of answer. And a mobile, you know, somebody that's going to sell you an umbrella is going to jump all over that, because you know what? That's a pretty easy statement. If I tweet out I've got cancer, you know what? Yeah, it is a cry for help, because I am looking for a community to come around and support me. But I'm not quite ready to have a pharma company tweet back at me that you need adriamycin, doxorubicin, you know, bleomycin, vincristine, vinblastine. They're not going to know. There's not enough context around I have cancer. There's not enough context around I have cancer in 140 characters. Can they reach out and try to initiate? You know, I would respond very well to, hey, I see you were just diagnosed with cancer. Start, here's an education site, you know.
So reaching back is appropriate.
Reaching back is appropriate if it's general education.
Yeah, it depends on what you're saying. It you depends on what you're treating.
It's relevant.
Reaching back is one thing, but selling immediately is completely different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's within 30 seconds of me tweeting out I have cancer, then I'm gonna consider it a bot that's coming in, you know. But yeah.
And also, if it's a person from a company, I think that also. I mean, if it's just such and such company, you know, that's one thing. If it's, you know, Laura from Sanofi reaching out, I might feel a little more comfortable being able to say, okay, well, I know it's her. Maybe she's got a little bit of a bio, and I can look up the blog and that sort of thing. And the company needs to be a person. I mean, we're people, and, you know, it.
When a logo reaches out to you, it's not so warm and friendly.
It just doesn't look. It doesn't look very engaging. It just looks like it's like a bot, like something automatic. Like you had to. Like you saw the word cancer and you wrote back.
We should be, though.
Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Scott Maitland. I own a pharmacy here in town, and I've heard you guys talk about pharma, patients, practitioners, but no one's mentioned the pharmacist, which I think is a little odd. And I'm just curious, what is y'all's relationship with your pharmacist? Is he or she a person that you go to get unbiased information? Drug reps don't really come visit us at all. And in fact, we kind of irritate big pharma because I compound as well. So I'm just curious if you're using pharmacists as a person on your healthcare team and interacting with them socially.
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't.
I love my pharmacist.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a nice woman, but I don't really.
I actually, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because in some regards, I actually wrote about this about 2 years ago, so it's funny that the question comes up now. But I view my pharmacist as sort of my last defense. As I walk, when I take my prescription and walk out the door, that's when the game starts for me, kind of deal. And I'm not taking, you know, in terms of chemo drugs, obviously I'm not taking those now, but there's other drugs that I take to address some of the long-term side effects from my original chemotherapy. And I'm on quite a few different things. And my pharmacist helps me manage, you know, the different drugs that I have to take and whether or not there's interactions. And I always, whenever I pick up a prescription, I have a 10 to 15 minute conversation with that pharmacist. And, you know, I think that that's an equation, that's a piece in the equation that often gets overlooked. And so I think it's very interesting to start watching CVS and Rite Aid and Walgreens and some of these the larger chains, if you will, get into the retail healthcare delivery space where you've got the Minute Clinics and the Now Clinics and things like that. I think that that's an aspect of care that's very overlooked.
And I think so
it's a great question.
And I think it's worth noting that what we're talking about here is specific to industry, but I think when you look at pharmacists and patient relationships, insurers, you know, all, I mean, the American healthcare system is incredibly fragmented, and I think everyone's got a place to, you know, to plug into, you know, this wisdom of the crowds that right now is is somewhat separated. In fact, I'm curious, how many people here work directly for a pharmaceutical company? How many work for representatives of a pharmaceutical company, agencies, things like that? Doctors, patients, other people who are responsible for delivering healthcare to 300 million people. In some ways.
Nurses.
Yeah. I'm. Geez, I said pharmacists and insurers. I.
We love the nurses.
Love nurses.
So.
ONS.
I think that's where the silos need to be broken down, because there are so many, you know, tools for just guidance. You know, I can quite count people like 10 great, go to this website. The last thing you want is to learn how the cancer patient can be, you know, inundated with, you know, I don't think I need that.
Oh, we're recording audio.
I have such a big mouth, I don't think I need that. I think that really what would be great is a combination of ASCO, Oncology Nursing Society, National Cancer Survivor people, getting together and doing, like, you know, a flow chart and a diagram of what's appropriate if someone tweets, I have cancer, and how can we set up a really comprehensive site that's a living document that people can go to, and it's updated frequently, so you don't have this fragmented approach to, hey, we have, like, for the example, the Oncology Nurses Society has, we have the cancer journey, ASCO has something, NCCS has something. And so here you have this overwhelming, so if you're the start on that journey, it would be great to plug into social media and have just a few places to go instead of 100.
Right.
And pharma, even own brand teams. I, you know, we work with, like, brand teams that don't even speak to each other, funding the same thing for different types of cancer drugs. Here's what happens when you've just been diagnosed. So I think the industry, and that would be a place to start to look to do a better job.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't be so intrusive when someone announces it on Facebook or whatever.
That's really one of the biggest issues right now is if you go to, you start at Google and you type in breast cancer and you're hit with, you know, 55 million websites, where do you go? There's no consolidation of information, and I think it would be a very interesting proposition to see pharma companies work with the, you know, ONS or ASCO or something where they work on education and collaborative sites that provide a consolidated message. So as a cancer community across the board, pharma companies that are dealing with oncology drugs, different oncology societies, if they got together and worked in a partnership that said, you know what, for the patients, we're going to do this, instead of are we going to do yet another unbranded site or another branded site or something along those lines? So,
All right,
Carmen.
Okay, I'm on fire. I work for a healthcare communications group, and so full context. And I work on the clinical research side, so not an actual drug, but I help the pharma that's trying to get drugs out there and bringing patients to researchers. So I think it's even simpler in creating context, because there are IRB rules, right? Any kind of message you have has to have IRB approval before it hits a patient. So what you do, here's my point, be human, Carrie, be human, right? Mm-hmm. Listen to who the leaders are that are blogging from the patient side. Be humble. That's a new thing for pharma, actually. Mm-hmm. Be humble. Just listen, and go, okay, here seem to be the pivotal leaders. I will approach them and say, here's what I've heard that I think the needs are from your community. Here are some tools and messaging and communications that I think we could provide. What are your thoughts? And then let the patient community take the lead and say, here's what we'd like to see, here's how we'd like to see it, and then provide it. And then you start building that relationship, and then you could take it from there. But I think that context has to be humble first, listen first, and then ask. And then once you have the invitation to come into the community, you can act.
I mean, totally agree. I mean, for
the role that I have, I've only been in it for about a year and a half, and I don't come from pharma. My background is in other industries as well. So you have to start listening. You have to figure out how this team, my team, was going to add value. It wasn't about just jumping in. I totally agree with you. And we were right, authentic and transparent right from the start. So I think these guys have been saying the face of Laura and the face of my team has, started having relationships, but also it's at times adding value back into their communities as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, and I mean, first of all, I want to say I agree with everything you said. So that was really very well stated. And I also think just, as far as adding value and messaging, it's very important to know that just to really communicate and engage with the patient leaders, because the messaging and the ideas that you come up with for how to sell your product in your meetings, and I've been in meetings where, trying to develop strategy for marketing a product are not necessarily always going to be in line with what the patient's immediate concerns are, because when you actually get into day-to-day life and the actual struggles for how to incorporate a device or a drug into the daily challenges of relationships and family are going to be different than just these are the potential side effects, that sort of thing. It goes much deeper and broader than I think a lot of pharmaceutical companies realize, especially when it comes to a chronic condition like diabetes.
I want to give one quick example. My only experience ever with a medical device, if you will, was in 2004, when I was first diagnosed with breast cancer. I was in a clinical trial for mammocyte radiation, and mammocyte radiation is a brachytherapy. So essentially they put a little balloon in the breast and drop a radiation seed into it and then pull it out, and you're done in 5 days. It's great. I went to the mammocyte website and, basically made my decision to use that radiation technique based on what I read online in 2004. I've learned a great deal since 2004, but my suggestion would be show a balanced view of your product. Don't be afraid to talk about the bad stuff. I ended up having a very horrifying experience with that device. If I had known that there was a potential for this to happen before I had started the treatment, I still would have taken that treatment. But I would have liked a heads up as to what could have happened. And I'm not talking just, they gloss over like the basic side effects. I want to know about, when something completely fails. And what that's going to do, and if there's a way to show a very balanced, measured statement about your drug or your product, you really owe it to us to do that. Because in some cases, we're still going to go ahead and take that drug or use that device. But, help us open our eyes a little bit sooner.
Can we take one last question? We've got about 5 minutes left, and then I know I'll certainly be available afterwards. Anyone who wants to gather to discuss. Oh, we actually have two more questions or comments.
So I work with both pharma and healthcare insurance companies. And so what I'm curious about is we've talked a lot about pharma, but have you had any insurers reach out to you as part of this process as well? And if whether they have or not, I mean, what would you like to hear from them if they were to reach out to you? Because, I mean, that's of interest to us as well.
I don't know if I've ever been reached out to by an insurance company. I don't think so, no.
I don't think, as a patient with a chronic illness, I don't think I have a lot of nice things to say about insurance companies.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they don't usually reach out to me in a way that's favorable. They just send bills and no's. So it's like there's not a good warm fuzzy going on there.
No.
But there shouldn't be. I mean.
Yeah.
That I think would be even harder than the relationship that we're trying to change with pharma. I mean, that goes above and beyond.
That's the kind of thing where if we knew their face, we'd come find them. Like, that's a bad
thing. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that unlike pharma, which has done a lot of ham-handed, not necessarily, you know, productive outreach, because I've seen it happen. I'm guessing you're not even getting bad outreach from insurance companies.
No, I have one bad outreach. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2004. I got a call from my insurance company in September of 2006 that said, "Hey, literally, we've got these breast cancer resources we'd like to send you."
2 years later,
and I said to the lady, "I said, what information are you going off of?" "Well, it says right here in your chart you were just diagnosed with breast cancer." I said, "I hate to burst your bubble, but I was diagnosed in 2004. Thank you very much. I don't think I need your help." You know, it wasn't a bot. I'll tell you that.
Obviously, a bad.
She was on a clearly they were on a very long coffee break.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's all about free.
I just have
one last question.
One last question. I know, Brian, you just briefly mentioned what your wish list would be. We've tried multiple platforms. I work for a marketing agency. We've tried forums. We've tried Facebook, Twitter, all of these things. What would the most ideal contact from a pharmaceutical company or agency look like for each of you? What platform would it be through, and what kind of message would they send to you?
You guys are looking at me.
I get a beer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it. I mean, if you're really trying to develop a relationship, it needs to be one-on-one. So I'd say email, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, send me a note, say hi, introduce yourself, tell me what your plans are and what you're looking to do. And, you know, if we're going to be at the same conference, you know, try to schedule some time to meet with me. Or, you know, it doesn't need to be like a phone call or anything like that. It doesn't need to be anything expensive or time consuming. But I mean, a tweet is nice, but if you're really trying to develop a relationship with influencers, I mean, that's only going to get you so far as actually understanding each other. And same with forums. I mean, forums can be quickly lost. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Just one last comment. Don't necessarily go out and build another site or another forum.
Another thing.
So
please use
there are a ton of resources that are already out there. So if you start talking with patient leaders or the key folks in a community, don't build another breast cancer education site. There's too many. So find somebody to partner with or find somebody that's giving out the best information and do a sponsorship or some sort of outreach with them. Don't give us yet another, you know, information source that might be in conflict with, you know, something we find 3 pages later. So find the stuff that's out there already and start highlighting the people that are doing it right. Don't try to reinvent the wheel again, because there's a lot of that going on.
Just create the right experience for that person. Understand what that is and then create the right experience.
And show them where the good stuff already, I mean, because, you know, we've been around for a while and there's, you know, we've filled the gaps already. So just, you know, engage and also just highlight what's working and collaborate, I think is a big word I would use. Collaborate. Brainstorm. You know, use the patient's experience to come up with your next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've hit the end of our time. I really appreciate the time all the panelists have taken and you guys. We really hope to have a dialogue, and so I don't know if the coffee was extra good or if you guys went to bed earlier than I did. But.